League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome in. It's the early line on a Thursday morning. I'm Kevin Walsh, joined by Donnie Wrightside, with a lot to get to here over the next 2 hours on Sports Grid DRS. How you feeling?
Feeling good today, Thursday, football, NFL. Well, at least if you call it a game, is back in our lives. But we also have some big time baseball to cover. It's a good time to be around here on the grid.
No doubt about it. We start the 7-7 headlines off, though, with the postseason in Major League Baseball. And in the NLCS, the San Diego Padres looked to be in a world of trouble. A 4-0 deficit to the Phils was erased, though, and finished up an 8-5 victory as San Diego evens this series before going to Philadelphia.
Yeah, I was just thinking about watching that up 4-0 early on. Who knows how many runs the Philadelphia Phillies were going to score in that game at that point, and saying, man, there's 3 home games, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. They might not even need the Sunday game, and the Phillies would clinch and knock the Padres out. And over the next 30 minutes, that evaporated, and so did Arenola. When your ace is on the mound, you have a 4-run lead, you have to win that game, and it just brings back memories. 10 years ago, the Cliff Lee game, as we call it here in Philadelphia, a 4-0 lead over the Cardinals evaporated, and so did the Phillies season that year as well.
Right now, the updated series price here, a -110 on both of these teams. A very even series seen right now through 2 games and through the odds on the FanDuel Sportsbook. In the ALCS, it is Justin Verlander who powers through the New York Yankees lineup after an early home run to Harrison Bader, worked out of trouble with the strikeout pitch. 11 Ks in 6 innings of work. Overall, the Astros struck out 17 New York Yankees as they take game number 1 4-2.
Yeah, I don't think it was too much of a surprise here for the Yankees finishing up their series against the Guardians, celebrating a little bit, flying down to Houston, and they were a little bit, you know, sluggish here in this game, only scoring 2 runs, but it's probably expected. We expected a Verlander bounce back, but it looks like he was in a little bit of trouble early in that game. We'll cover that a little bit more, but also Verlander, 11K is closing out a nice odds boost there at the FanDuel Sportsbook that included Snell, Nola, and Verlander, each to get 5 or more strikeouts, perfectly done, plus 200 in the pocket.
Astros up now to a -300 favorite to win the ALCS, sitting at +105 to win the World Series. In the National Football League tonight, we do have Thursday Night Football, as you said, but we've still got some major questions. It's the Cardinals and the Saints. It's Kyler Murray verse to be determined. Dennis Allen, Saints head coach, still waiting to name who will be the starting quarterback for the New Orleans Saints tonight.
I always love professional football teams, Kevin, that act like high school teams and high school Harry head coaches that we're not going to show you until the kickoff. If you have to do that, that means do you really even have a quarterback that's worth starting at this point?
Beautiful thing, though, about sports books is they do not care about Dennis Allen's desire to keep things under wraps. Andy Dalton with player props out in full, so it is safe to assume he will be the quarterback. But again, we will break that down in its entirety. We also got some word around Odell Beckham Jr. I know the other day, Travis Kelce restructuring his contract a little out of nowhere, and it does seem like the indication is there's an eye on Odell Beckham Jr. from the Kansas City Chiefs right now.
Yeah, he might be a little nice little addition piece to whoever picks him up. But let's remember, the guy tore his ACL in February of last year. Typical timeline to be 100% right is a year. So I don't know, maybe Kansas City's going to say, if we get to the Super Bowl, he will be right by the time we get there. But hey, you can't fault him. You just want to add good players to your team. I don't mind it, Kansas City, if you do that.
Radio audience is here right now on a Thursday morning. I'm Kevin Walsh. That's Donnie Wrightside. We're with you on Sports Grid Radio, Sirius XM, Channel 159, the early line. The NBA last night had quite a bit of action, 12 games overall. One of the big score lines that really, I'm sure, jumped off the page to a lot of people, the Brooklyn Nets in their home opener go down to the New Orleans Pelicans, 130-108. Kevin Durant's 32 points, nowhere near enough, as Zion and Brandon Ingram got a big-time win.
Yeah, good start there for the Pels. Team total to the over yesterday, coming in as a slight dog there against the Nets. But this isn't really about the Pelicans, who I thought would be a pretty good basketball team this year. It's going to be the fun, and get your popcorn ready for watching these Brooklyn Nets games over the first month.
Was in the building live for the game. Effort jumped off of the page. A big gap between the two. New Orleans looked like they knew the season started. The game counted. The Nets, anything but, as that game played out over 48 minutes. Also, in another primetime game, we saw the Phoenix Suns go up against the Dallas Mavericks, a team that embarrassed them last year in the postseason. It looked like Dallas was going to embarrass the Suns once again, led by as many as 22 points. You turn and look, and well, the Phoenix Suns complete the comeback 107-105. They did not cover a four-point spread. That comeback happened, by the way, Donnie, with Chris Paul on the bench for the entirety of it.
Yeah, how about that? Some interesting news there on that. But I didn't even see the game last night. Caught the replay this morning going over some notes and said, oh, man, look at that. A blowout winner for the Mavericks here on the road. Impressive stuff. Little did I know, a massive comeback was in the works.
Yeah, absolutely incredible. Again, Chris Paul still did log 30 minutes, but he was a minus 9. Compare that to Devin Booker, a plus 20. Does certainly seem like this is going to be Devin Booker's team this season. We saw a pair of top picks square off in Detroit. Jaden Ivey versus Paolo Bancaro. Paolo Bancaro, phenomenal in his debut, scoring 27 points. Jaden Ivey, though, in the victory with 19-4. Bancaro's odds to win the Rookie of the Year, though, still shortening up now at plus 185 on the FanDuel Sportsbook. We hit a break and we come back.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Back with you here on Sports Grid, getting set to take a look at Thursday night football in what is a huge game for both of these teams. The starts have not been what they were looking for. The Arizona Cardinals sitting at 2-4, the New Orleans Saints sitting at 2-4. And both of these teams have plenty of question marks around everything that is going on with them. But the Saints' question marks were a bit more pressing, as there is uncertainty at the quarterback position. Now, Andy Dalton is, I would put it at about a 90% confidence he starts this game, since we have player props on him, yardage, passing, touchdowns, and things of the like. But even that is a bit surprising, because this was Jameis's job, and it was lost through injury, not through poor play, though the play was not great. I was going to ask you who you think should start, but it does appear we have that answer, Donnie. So what do you think about that decision, and is that the right one for New Orleans moving forward?
I think, I don't know about moving forward, but for tonight's game, it probably makes some sense. Like, we talked about the Jameis Winston injuries coming into the offseason or coming off of the offseason with the knee, and then you break, like, I don't know, 19 bones in your back / ribs. That's never a good thing for a quarterback that you're already worried about the mobility coming off the offseason. But if I'm looking for tonight's game, it would be Andy Dalton for myself. But outside of that, look, I guess it's just going to be the way it is here. But there's two sinking ships on both of these teams, right? Arizona and New Orleans. And it just seems to me like New Orleans is trying to find their way out, but at the same time, the injuries just continue to mount at the wide receiver position on top of it. I'm not so sure it matters all that much. And we're going to talk about some prop bets in this game a little bit later, at least from a New Orleans perspective. It seems like Taysom Hill, why not just let him roll out there at quarterback for the entire game anyway, Kevin?
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of interesting when you play it out here, because when you're breaking down the New Orleans Saints, what do they do well? Alvin Kamara in the backfield. Yes, great football player. Decent offensive line. The quarterback you thought was going to be Jameis Winston to start this season, and see what he had. Could this be your future quarterback here for the Saints, or were you going to have to move on? And Andy Dalton certainly is a solid backup option, because you can still keep Taysom Hill in that, let's just say, Swiss Army knife role. But the point comes together. What are you getting out of Andy Dalton? And would you just be better off letting Taysom Hill be your quarterback all the way through? Now, it would be a little bit different if you're looking to pass and have some options out there at wide receiver and say, well, give me the better passer, which clearly would be Jameis Winston if he's healthy, or even Andy Dalton as a backup compared to Taysom Hill. But when you're just trying to muster offense with the injuries that you have, maybe it's Taysom Hill as the person that you're going to want to decide on. Now, if we start to switch it over and say to ourselves, okay, let's try to break this football game down. One side, New Orleans, 2-4. The other side, the Arizona Cardinals, also 2-4. You have a home team here in the Arizona Cardinals that when you're trying to look at it, say, all right, home team should have the advantage. It's Thursday night. But let's remember, the Arizona Cardinals have been terrible at home for the last year at home. So maybe that sort of quasi-advantage that you might have is no longer there. Also, keep in mind, both of these teams are dome teams. No real advantage saying, hey, we're used to playing out in the cold weather. You're not going to have that there. But if we're looking from an Arizona perspective, the other thing pops up as well. Last week, you lost a wide receiver. You traded here for Robbie Anderson. You added, Kevin, DeAndre Hopkins. And that's something that you can't just say, you know what? I don't know what I'm getting out of him. He's better than the majority of the wide receivers in football. He should have an impact tonight.
I really, for me on Hopkins, and again, I know we're going to be able to expand on his props a little bit later in the show, but we see a guy return. What are we going to get from this guy? Why would we not get full workload DeAndre Hopkins? He's not returning from injury. He was suspended. He has been training the entire way to get there. He's not new to the offense. He's been in Arizona now for a little while. And as you said, look around. Where else is the ball going? They've already told us Robbie Anderson will be hardly used, if at all. And Marquise Hollywood-Brown is now injured and not going to be playing here, certainly tonight, if not for a long time, with the Arizona Cardinals. DeAndre Hopkins has been the guy when he's been in Arizona, and he comes back to a wide receiver room that needs him maybe more than ever. Donnie, again, we'll get to the player props, but do you have any questions about workload or rust overall for Hopkins?
Not necessarily. And I'm not worried about his conditioning, because I think you hit it perfectly. He's a wide receiver. He's probably been running hundreds of routes here over the past couple weeks, getting ready to get back into the ballgame. But the one thing you can never anticipate is actual game speed. And again, it's not to say he's going to be tired by the third route he runs, but we see it a lot, Kevin. You come back in your first few games, the calf injury, the hamstring injury, the twisted ankle here, where your body is just not used to getting that sort of like brush back. And what I mean by that is just running a route here, fighting through a cornerback, getting tackled, running across the middle. Things are a little bit different here. I only worry about injury. I don't necessarily worry about him being acclimated into the offense, or even just saying, I'm tired, I can only play 20 plays. I don't see that part of it.
Yeah, and I know there's been already kind of reports that Hopkins is pushing to play the entire football game, as you would anticipate from a DeAndre Hopkins. Again, these are two 2-4 teams. The Cardinals last year for a portion of the season looked like the best team in the league. It looked like they had the NFC West. They ultimately did squander the division away, but they made the postseason. The Saints were very close to making the playoffs, and if the Super Bowl champion Rams didn't blow a big lead to the Niners, actually, in Week 18, the Saints would have made the playoffs. And they had plenty of their own expectations coming into this season. Arizona right now is 5-1 to make the postseason. The Saints a little bit shorter at plus 460. I'm not asking you, tell me one of these teams are making the playoffs, because maybe you don't think either one is. That's certainly the odds don't. But of the numbers, Donnie, when you look at these two teams, which one is a more intriguing option in the market to make the playoffs?
I would actually say here, now I was a lot higher on the New Orleans Saints than most people were into the offseason, because I just looked at the roster top to bottom. It was pretty talented. Now, they're not having a good season, but you can say, well, any team that loses their top wide receivers, all three of them for any length of time, you're probably going to struggle. And oh, yeah, you're down to your backup quarterback already. I understand that, but it's the NFL. You're going to get injuries. But when I'm looking at, I can't say both, because neither one of these teams are actually making the playoffs. But the game that we play, Kevin, where you say, let's just take a look at these two team schedules, because typically one team has a more favorable schedule than the other. And I got to tell you, let's just go from a New Orleans Saints perspective. They're on the road tonight. They're going to be dogs. Thursday night road game. You know me. I think that's the worst case scenario for a team in football to say, what thing do you want to avoid? How about just a Thursday night road football game? And I'll be happy with that. At the Cardinals, then they're going to take on the Raiders at home, which, okay, Raiders are a pretty talented team. Ravens, Steelers, who might be a little bit better with Kenny Pickett. Rams, 49ers, Bucks, Falcons, Browns, Eagles to end the season, and the Panthers. How many wins are you getting out of that bunch here? And then if you flip it over to the Cardinals and you say, well, who do they end up playing here for the season? And you say, well, it's got to be a little bit easier than what Donnie was just talking about here for the New Orleans Saints. Not the case here. Saints, Vikings, Seahawks, Rams, 49ers, Chargers, Patriots, Broncos, Buccaneers, Falcons, and Niners. My goodness. Like, where are the wins actually coming from? So I'll just stick with it preseason here. If I'm looking for team turmoil, I don't think it's so much in for the Saints, as I think they're more injured than, let's just say, having organizational issues. It looks like to me, throw a couple losses on Arizona, they're going to implode from the inside out.
I think the Cardinals have a huge game, obviously, tonight. But if they win it, you can kind of look around the room and say, all right, Hopkins is back. And with DeAndre Hopkins, we're one of the best teams in the NFL. True or not, they are allowed to believe that because it was true last season. We can't forget, they fell apart last year when Hopkins was gone. So is it out of the realm of possibility that with Hopkins coming back, they just find who they once were? I can't say it's out of the realm of possibility. So at 5-1, I have to take the look at Arizona compared to New Orleans. That is a big-time issue at quarterback, health, and head coach. They miss you.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Back with you right here on the early line. And Major League Baseball yesterday provided us a pair of Champions Series games. We begin in the National League where the Padres were seemingly on the brink of some major, major trouble. Down 0-2 on your way to Philadelphia is not where you wanted to be, and they pulled it back. They were able to win this game 8-5 after trailing 4-0. Donnie, your takeaway from game number two between the Padres and the Phillies.
The Phillies had this series, and I know you have to win four games, Kevin, but the Phillies had this series. You go into San Diego, you take the first two games of that series, you roll back into 2-3-2 format, you just win a series at home, which is basically regular season, three-game set in Philadelphia, take 2 of 3, you don't have to worry about going back to San Diego. Now, in order to not go back to San Diego, you got to win the next three games. So before we talk about like what happened last night, let me just move forward quickly here on that piece. What have you heard me say all summer long about the Philadelphia Phillies winning a world championship? It was that you would run Bailey Falter out there every few days and say, hey, looks like we'll just take a loss here today. Now, you're in the NLCS. You're playing very good baseball. Usually you look toward, okay, who's the next starter going to be? Ranger Suarez. average pitcher. That's fine. He's a legitimate major league pitcher. Not an ace by any stretch here. But then you already know what I'm hearing about game four. They asked Rob Thompson, manager of the Philadelphia Phillies, what's it looking like there? Yeah, it looks like we'll just mix and match and do a bullpen day. The Phillies are going to have game four where they're not pressed, Kevin. They didn't play 17 straight days here. And what are you going to do? Two of our starters are out with injury, two are out with COVID. A bullpen day in game four, which basically means you don't even have four legitimate starters on your staff. That's where I get worried. Where, as if you already had that two-game lead heading back to Philadelphia, all right, we're going to get Wheeler back in game five. Let's see if we can win with Suarez. In game four, we'll just see what happens here. I'm kind of disappointed in that, but I still do believe in the Philadelphia Phillies and that series price there, a minus 110 both sides for the Pods and the Phillies. Sounds about right.
I think for San Diego, to battle back like that is obviously massive, but to do it against Aaron Nola is so big because Nola was just unhittable to start this postseason. And for the Padres, look, clearly they have some great front-end pitching. They've proved that now up against the Mets and the Dodgers. They've obviously had to earn it in a major way to get here. But Zach Wheeler and Aaron Nola is a truly formidable 1-2 punch. It's something we've talked about so much with this Phillies team. It's, you know, at times they were being hand-waved or an offense-only group right in the preseason. It's like, well, hold on a minute, though. Like, Nola Wheeler gives you a very real chance here. So for the Padres to be able to say, okay, we can hit this guy is very important. I like where you're going, though, looking ahead here a little bit. As this is right now a minus 110 kind of both directions, and talking a little bit about, you know, a bullpen game, it gets interesting. Because sure, you could do the 3 days rest Zach Wheeler, then 3 days rest Aaron Nola, but then you're throwing a bullpen game in game number six. Well, that sounds like a bit of a nightmare, and then Ranger Suarez is all of a sudden getting the ball in a game seven. But on the Padres side of it, do they give the ball back to Mike Clevinger? That just does not sound like something you would want to do if you were San Diego, because the last time we saw Clev, he got absolutely lit up by the Dodgers. Now, that's the Dodgers, I understand. But is there a chance, Donnie, that we almost get like a handshake agreement from both these teams for game number four? Like a nice regular season 9.5 total checking in here, and it's Clev versus, you know, a bit of, I guess, Noah Syndergaard, but really a Phillies bullpen game?
Yeah, give me one of those 72-degree nights here in October in Philadelphia, light wind blowing out, and have a bullpen start for both franchises. That would be pretty incredible now that we have the DH built in. It seems like both of these offenses are now getting going. But it is amazing, though. It's the NLCS. Like, think about this, Kevin. Shouldn't you? You're supposed to have like four legitimate starters, and even like Gibson, where has he been? You brought Syndergaard in to be like a fourth and fifth guy, and now he's turned into, yeah, he can go two or three innings maximum. It's kind of funny how you really see who the top pitchers are in Major League Baseball when you get to the postseason, where it never used to be this way. You had a seven-game set. Your aces took the mound games one and two. Your three and four starters got out there. Then your aces took the mound again in five and six, and then all hands on deck in game seven, right? It doesn't seem that way anymore, but it's interesting to talk about where the Phillies like, yeah, game four, just throw our, you know, markedly average bullpen out there in a huge spot just to see what happens.
It's, I look forward to it. That'd be a really nice gift if we were to get a 9.5 out of nowhere in the postseason, where your sevens are kind of the peak of these numbers at times. Over in the American League, the Astros take game number one. It's kind of interesting, right? If I just said, hey, final score 4-2, Verlander goes six innings, strikes out 11, you go, yeah, sounds about right. Cover the run line. They were a decent-sized favorite. Tyone had the ball for the Yankees. But the beginning of this game had an opportunity to look a lot different. Harrison Bader had a home run in the second. That was after the Yankees left opportunities on the board in the opening inning. And then you obviously take a look at what happened there in the third inning, where a walk and a Stanton double had runners on second and third with just one out. And it was again Josh Donaldson who came up and struck out. And then Verlander struck out six consecutive Yankees and was absolutely dominant and largely shut the door on this baseball team. I'm not sitting here telling you that the Yankees should have won. What I am saying is the Yankees had opportunities, Don, to be up 3-4 early in this game and knock Verlander out, and they did squander those chances.
They did squander those chances, and here's the reason why that was important. This wasn't like, you know, Aaron Nola was rolling along and just, you know, had a 4-0 lead. You figured he was just going to coast. What are you going to give up? Most one or two runs over seven innings, the Phillies should win this ball game. Maybe tack on another run. But getting back to Verlander here, you look at a guy that had a ridiculously low ERA and was dominant, gets to the postseason and gets crushed. So you're saying, all right, it's a bounce-back performance. I don't think that's going to happen again to Verlander. But he was shaky in that first inning. You put a double in the gap, a ball in the seats. He's starting to question himself. It's almost as if he worked through his problems in those first couple innings. He goes, oh, yeah, that's right. I'm striding a little bit too far towards the plate, or I'm leaving my shoulder untucked here. I just made those changes, and I'm back to Verlander, Cy Young Award-winning player in 2022. That's the tough part here because he did get his mojo back, but also, if we're talking about mojo and some of the best players in the game, as we just talked about Verlander on the mound, how about at the plate? Aaron Judge in the playoffs? Ooh, remember that home run he hit? Yeah, me too. But he's also hitting 167 in the postseason and striking out at a ridiculous rate. I understand the regular season is different from the postseason, and you just can't carry it over. But players that you look at on opposite teams here, like really stepping up for your ball club, Bryce Harper here, a big money guy stepping up for the Philadelphia Phillies and crushing the baseball and doing damage. Can you imagine if Aaron Judge just took that momentum into the playoffs and was hitting like 400 or 500 through those six games? It would be a completely different story. They need their MVP to step up in the worst way here in the middle of that lineup.
No doubt. I've been very critical of the Judge performances. I've been really critical of people that were bothered that Yankees fans booed a four strikeout performance from Aaron Judge. But you know what's even more surprising than that? Jose Altuve is 0-for-19 in the postseason.
It's true.
I cannot wrap my head around that. I am not, trust me. I'd love to come up here, scream, slander, yell, and smile, but that's really not even the point of me bringing this up. It's really, really not. 0-for-19, a 300 hitter who was absolutely on fire, by the way, batting .337 in the month of September and .500 in just a couple of games that were played in October. How is he 0-for-19 right now? And by the way, because this is maybe where you're going to see a really interesting conversation take place in New York if the Yankees lose this, Donnie, right? Hey, we'd like to see Aaron Judge step up and maybe, but you look elsewhere, it's like, ah, but yeah, because the problem is everybody behind him not as good. Altuve doesn't have a hit yet, not one, and here they are, still yet to lose a game in the playoffs to Houston Astros.
Yeah, no, it's really – because that's – usually your leadoff batter with Altuve sets the table. You can't pitch around. The guy will take the walk. He's got power and just gets on base. That's what he does. Sets the table for Pena, Alvarez, Bregman, and Tucker and gets everything going. Meanwhile, Aaron Judge is the guy. Put a guy on base. I'm going to drive a baseball into the seats. Now, conspiracy theories, having some fun. You know, maybe you want to check around. Is Altuve getting a couple extra Amazon packages today that come in? Maybe a sensor here. Maybe a trigger point here. Maybe an extra iPhone and says, whoa! The ballpark, it's closed here. I just walked in the locker room. There's nobody in there. Altuve is fully dressed in his uniform already. Maybe some things, maybe don't want to tear off that uniform here to check for any wrongdoings. But eventually, superstars get back to being superstars. You don't anticipate Altuve going much longer than this. And the same thing with Judge. But it is interesting. The reason why we're not bringing it up on a national level, the Houston Astros are winning. If yesterday's game was 4-2 and Aaron Judge struck out four times, okay, get it together, Aaron. That's okay. When you come around, we'll really pulverize this team. It just gets magnified more when you're not playing all that well.
Quick one for you here now that we're playing seven-game sets. I hated in the NBA when we went 2-3-2. I think it's actually a bit of an advantage for the road team. As the home team, if you protect home court, you should never be trailing in a series, and that's what it sets up here. Any issue with that in baseball? I know it's been this way forever, but now the Phillies get to play three consecutive games in Philadelphia. You'd expect them to be to win two out of three at the minimum.
Yeah, it stinks, and it's ridiculous, and I understand it. We used to put in, the reason why it was actually put in back in the NBA in the day and they started the 2-3-2 was because travel was hard. The Lakers were constantly playing the Celtics. You can't take all the cameras and the people back and forth, the non-charters. Yeah. That's what they did it to make it easier. But you're right. If I'm looking, it sounds crazy to say this, but if I have my choice in a series, I might take just the three games and have them at home, figuring that you work a split. You then take two out of three. All you got to do, Kevin, is go win one of the next two games in the opponent's building here. That's the way I would do it.
I tend to agree. Like, you feel like, there's no way we can at the minimum 4, 6, and 7. I see it similarly.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back into the Early Line Thursday edition. A lot going on out here, including the NBA. 12 games on the card last night, anticipation brewing here for the season, and none bigger than a game that was in New York. And if we're talking about big-time games, that's the Pelicans and the Nets. Setting the table from yesterday, the Brooklyn Nets closed at the FanDuel Sportsbook at a -3 favorite here, drawing a lot of attention. Why? Because the big three was healthy and was going to take the court, but also an upstart Pelicans team with the return of Zion Williamson. Well, that final score, Kevin, Pelicans 130, Nets 108, leaves a lot of us scratching our heads.
It was a dominant performance from the word go for New Orleans. 32-14, they won the first quarter. But again, I was in the building, and Kevin Durant starts to catch fire, as KD does, and it's a home court advantage, so you start to see them chop away. It's 58-50 at the break, and you go, all right, there's a little bit something here. Like, if the first play of the second half, right, is a Kyrie Irving made three, like, the Pels might start the half with a timeout, and here comes Brooklyn. But that did not happen. They allowed 40 third-quarter points. Again, there was a massive effort gap here that was astonishing for me. I understand that Brooklyn did not have a full complement of players. Joe Harris, Seth Curry, TJ Warren, none of them available. And I know that those are all guys that are somewhere within the top nine of this rotation, so I understand that. But for this game to look how it did was unacceptable. All of the noise that we have heard this offseason, how are you showing up and essentially not trying? They allowed in this basketball game 21 offensive rebounds. I know Jonas Valanciunas is big as all get out. I know Zion attacks the glass. That's effort. That's caring. That's trying. And they did none of that here in this home opener. And that was embarrassing. And we could spend a lot of time talking about Brooklyn, but it is game one of 82. And I wanted to make sure that I gave a little bit of love to their opponent. You bet their win total over, as did JY when we did our pick six just last Tuesday, getting people ready for this season. I know it's one game, but boy, that looks like a great bet because this looks like a great team. Zion has the chance to be a top 10 player in the NBA, and I do not mean at some point in his career. I mean this season. Zion has been statistically dominant. He just needs to be available 25-9, and Ben Simmons, a defensive player of the year caliber talent, had no answers for him in this game. Brandon Ingram with the quietest 28 points you will ever see, just picking spots and knocking it down. And another 20-plus point performance for CJ McCollum, rounding out a very lethal big three that has good depth behind it, DRS. Again, I know it's one game, but that over 45.5 looks like a fantastic bet.
It really does, because the talent is there, and I love to see last night in a blowout, 130-108, you still see Zion getting 30 minutes of action. If you can guarantee that he's healthy for the majority of the season, certainly he's going to be taking those maintenance days, but if I'm going to get 30 minutes out of him and 25 points to be super active across the glass, that helps everybody else on that team. Now, quickly again, to double down on Ben Simmons, taking a look at what he provides to the Nets, here's what we were told. Get in when you fit in. He's not going to shoot three-point shots, doesn't care about his jumper, but we have so much talent that people are just going to leave him alone, where you can take 7 to 8 shots a game, 5 dunks, get double-digit in points, but the key here is we don't need you for actual offense. In the city of Philadelphia where he was playing, he was catching a lot of guff like, look, in crunch time, take the basketball. You got to score. You got to loosen things up for Joel Embiid. You don't need that now. So what is he supposed to do this year? An all-elite defensive player. Go concentrate and use 90% of your energy on defense. And he got abused. He played 23 minutes, Kevin, and fouled out in that basketball game. Now, before we move on to some of the other games, I need to ask this question because this is actually what I wanted to see from a fan perspective to keep things interesting in the NBA. We talked about if the Nets get off to a hot start, 7-0, everything's working well. Hey, maybe this works out. That was an embarrassing performance at home, which you can compound that issue. What happens in a week and a half to 2 weeks or 3 weeks? The Nets are under 500. Who starts to squawk on this team? Is it Ben Simmons say they're not including me here? Is it Kevin Durant going, I knew I wanted to be traded. Now I'm not playing until you trade me. Or does Kyrie Irving say, you know what? Re-up me for another 5 years and $300 million because I'm going to be an MVP player. Just watch me shine out here.
So there's so much there. Look, as far as Ben goes, it was an awful performance, okay? It was his first real game in 487 days. I'm going to give him a little bit of leeway on all of that. I do think it is very possible, though, you see Steve Nash fired in season. Again, I was in the building, and there was a guy like four rows back that for basically the entirety of the second half screamed, "Hey, Steve, call a play." Because there's just nothing going on, right? It's KD ISO, Kyrie ISO, transition that doesn't work, all right, let's turn it over, kind of a situation. The scapegoat is likely Steve Nash, but I will add this, and I know we're going to talk a little bit about this when we do the preview for tonight's game with the Los Angeles Lakers. I think part of the reason that the Lakers have not emptied out off the picks and Russ is there is a better than 0% chance that KD says, I tried, it doesn't work, I'm gone. And once KD does that, Kyrie is not going to follow. He will just also be traded because that's what's best for Brooklyn, Donnie.
It just feels like it's one to watch. And sometimes we always tease, Kevin, where the offseason is more important than the regular games because of all the drama. This has everything set up to be a boom or bust situation in Brooklyn that we'll keep our eye on over the next couple weeks here. But let's flip it over to two of the good teams in the NBA, Phoenix Suns and the Dallas Mavericks. Last night, a 5.5-point favorite at the FanDuel Sportsbook on the opening number dropped to 4 at game time. 107-105 final. And the things that we can always agree on here are Luka Doncic is going to dominate regardless of anybody who's around them. 35-point effort last night, but also Devin Booker drops 28 points. I do want to give a shout out to the Dallas Mavericks making some changes because Wood coming off the bench here as an offseason acquisition, 25 points. We always talk around stacking talent around the Mavericks. They came up a little bit short. If you looked at the final score, you said, hey, Dallas played really well against Phoenix on the road. But the way that game played out, Dallas should have won that game. They let it get away.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned Christian Wood. Look, Jason Kidd with a I have no idea what I'm doing level performance in game number one. Christian Wood scored 16 consecutive points in the fourth quarter. Missed a shot, committed a foul on the next possession, and Jason Kidd subbed him out. That's okay. That's fine. They were up 10 at the time, Donnie. He never put Christian Wood back in. They said, hey, what was that about? He goes, little offense, defense. Hold on just a minute. Maxi Kleba is the offense or the defense? Because if he's the offense, you just took out a guy that had just scored 16 consecutive points. Yep. Okay? You only scored 24 in the quarter. And if he's the defense, well, then you don't know what Maxi Kleba is. So that's also not great. So a tough scene for Jason Kidd in game number one. On the other side of this, by the way, quickly with the Phoenix Suns, an awesome comeback down 20 in your own building, no doubt. 30 minutes for Ayton, hardly played in the first half. He and Monty do not get along. A legitimate trade candidate, when that time expires from basically, I can now trade a player, I extended. That is not going to be good. Oh, and then all of a sudden, Chris Paul played 30 minutes, and nobody knows if it was because he was injured, they went with hot hand Damian Lee, but the world where Chris Paul is not closing games in Phoenix is mind-blowing. The Suns won, they might win a lot, but this is not a team I want any part of right now with somebody that laid the four, watched them win and not cover. Not, this is one of the most like, you need to watch this locker room because things are not okay in Phoenix despite the 1-0 start.
Yeah, I need to have Patrick Beverley's take on Chris Paul in that game last night. Hopefully some fire takes about to come out about this one. But also talking about some fire starts in the NBA for careers. Paolo Banchero, 35 minutes, 11 of 18 from the field, 27 points. Ivy in that game also countered with 19 points. Two of those teams, Kevin, that are just look at the stacked talent for the future. 113-109 win for the Pistons. Talk about some of these rookies and their action here early on in the season.
This game perfectly captured the market, but also my thoughts on Jaden Ivey. As far as the market goes, Banchero was the favorite, and that number dropped after game number one, and that's understandable. Across the board, 27-9-5, 11 of 18 from the field, took seven shots from the foul line as well. He's going to be this team's leading scorer as a rookie. If he keeps up this efficiency, the fact that they're going to lose a lot in Orlando might not matter. Again, he's the rightful favorite in the market. But the fact that the Pistons won this game is why I'm interested in Jaden Ivey here as we head into the season. And also, Jaden Ivey contributing 19 points, 4 assists, 3 steals, playing very good basketball for this team. I just wonder if Ivey can change the conversation a bit because the Pistons win at a bigger rate relative to the Magic and relative, really, to the rest of these rookies, Benedict Mathurin, Jabari Smith, and maybe even Keegan Murray in Sacramento. One other note, Don, just because I thought that you would appreciate this. The fact that Paolo Banchero scored 27 points and did not shoot a three, I don't know what that's about. He was minus 120 to make one. As you and I know, it's about volume. You're not making one if you don't take one. Banchero, you will not see in three-point player prop parlays on Donnie's beloved Orlando Magic.
No, come on. Yeah, there's a lot of guys on that, which, you know, I love those young guns down in Orlando to fire away threes, particularly when they're getting beat. You can only come back by making a three. That's how I like to call it here. Also, we talk about some of these rookies having some, you know, big time advantages here early in the season, coming in, trying to take control of their teams, as we just talked about Paolo Banchero. But in the NBA, it's fun also on opening nights for some of these other teams because we get to see really good players in other teams' jerseys than what we're used to seeing. Let's talk about Donovan Mitchell, Rudy Gobert, and DeJounte Murray last night in some starts with their new basketball teams.
Yeah, some quick thoughts on all of them. Donovan Mitchell, 31-9 and was a plus 10 in his game here. A three-point loss to Toronto. What's noteworthy, though, Garland left this game with an eye injury. If he misses legitimate time, Donovan Mitchell might be putting up huge numbers right away in Cleveland. As far as Rudy Gobert goes, 23 points. The team's leading scorer. I just wonder if that's a matchup thing with OKC or if in Minnesota it's like, hey, let's get the new guy acclimated. And you know how often we bet narrative anytime touchdown scores in the NFL. If Minnesota, you know, if Karl Anthony Towns and Anthony Edwards said, hey, it's all right. This is going to be Gobert's night. And again, Gobert obviously took that in strides. DeJounte Murray, a good note for people as well. So he had 20 points, 11 assists, and 5 rebounds. His over-under for points, 20.5. Rebounds, 5.5. But the assist was about 7.5. You cashed over on points, rebounds, and assists. DeJounte Murray, another one of these guys that I label a Donnie guy. I felt like so often last year you were betting him for points plus rebounds plus assists. And that was, again, a market that hit. And it might be a market you want to trust where still other aspects of his game need to be figured out in a new situation here, playing alongside Trae Young, who commands a lot of the basketball, and John Collins, who actually was the team's leading scorer in the game, 24. But big performances, no doubt about it, Donnie, for all of those guys making their debut.
Yeah, good stuff last night in the NBA. A lot of these teams where you might have parlayed up, Kevin, as well. One of those surprises down on South Beach last night. The Chicago Bulls, a 7.5-point dog at the closing line at FanDuel, pulled the upset over the Miami Heat when, no surprise here, DeMar DeRozan dropped 37 points. It's Thursday. It means college football.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Closing out hour number one, there's some college football on tonight. In the ACC, you've got Georgia Tech versus Virginia. There's also a game going on between South Alabama and Troy. If I'm not mistaken, this is actually a meeting between both you and I's win totals in the ACC. You had an over on Virginia. I had an under on Georgia Tech. This would have been a spot where you said, perfect. Virginia's laying six on the road. Look at them, and let's hope they get it done. Well, Georgia Tech fired their head coach and completely saved their season. They're one of the worst teams in the Power Five with Jeff Collins, and Brent Key is now completely nuked this under. They have to lose out for Georgia Tech. Virginia, Donnie, just toast, awful. Brennan Armstrong last year, used to throw for 350 yards per game. Yep. Everything is going wrong for the Cavs.
Yeah, supposedly making a comeback, Billy Kemp, which is one of those guys that you like to bet on. Hey, look, they got nothing going for them except a pretty good quarterback and a nice set of wide receivers that hasn't worked out. But also, you're right. Like, Jeff Collins, I almost was feeling bad for him coming into the season, which he's the head coach. He recruited the guys. It's his doing. What do you want him to do? He's playing in the ACC here. His team's really underwhelming. He can't recruit. You fire him, and all of a sudden, you're a decent football team by beating Pittsburgh on the road and Duke here? It's kind of wild the way that happens because it's the same players. You're telling me this coach just actually has the right keys to the car and can advance his football team? I'm shocked at what Georgia Tech's doing, but by the way, I'm going to take Georgia Tech tonight because I'll ride that momentum against I don't know what the heck is going on in Virginia either.
It's they've won both games as a dog. It's Virginia's 1-5 against the spread as well. So it's not, but they're hanging around. No, they're not hanging around nothing. They've been unbelievably disappointing, no doubt. One thing I'm going to look at, we don't have props listed up yet just for this game, but I do anticipate they are coming. Sims, the quarterback for Ja Tech, is a big-time runner and could, I think, get loose here. Virginia's rush defense is good overall, but I think it's going to key in more on the running backs and could open up some rush lanes for Jeff Sims. We'll see as the board develops.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.